if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 320. This is our 2024 Wyndham Championship Tips podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selection for this week's PGA Tour action. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Visit our world-famous Golf Betting System website where we have my in-depth betting preview for the Wyndham. We've got Sedgefield Country Club strokes gained rankings for the field, form stats, plus, of course, new and old predictor models for the Wyndham. All of our content is available across both events completely free of charge with no paywall. We are available on X. You can follow us at A Good Talk Golf for Barry, at Golf Betting for Paul. I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available. Now, you guys, as listeners, power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, as ever. For those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Don't forget as well, that Spotify five-star button. That's really easy. You just got to press it. Right, this one is entitled, Chaps, Incredible Podcast. We are so close, ! Five stars. Hi, gents. Over the past year, I've swapped my football betting for golf betting. This podcast has helped me no end. From the stats to agronomy and all that you discuss is useful and informative. It does feel like we are all so close to that big winner after having been on a few of Steve's second places. I think second place Steve could be a new nickname. Keep up the good work, gents, and best of luck with your picks for the rest of the season. That is from Chris. And Chris is from Sheffield. Chris, appreciate your time. Thank you.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Chris. I guess that must have been before your Nick Dunlap win a week or two ago, Steve.
Yeah, we've had one, haven't we? We've had one win. We need more, though.
You're going to need more.
For more, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think this could be the week, you know.
It is the week.
Just to let the listeners know, we are on a community selection. So bear with us.
Oh, dear.
Bear with us. Right, can you two take the people through the Olympics? Because I was on holiday last week and barely... Well, I didn't watch any of it, so... I know that Tommy finished second. There's a surprise.
Yeah.
Over to you guys. I mean, Scott. I will say one thing. Scotty Scheffler's finish and John Rahm's collapse. I kind of looked at the leaderboard, so I know what went on, but can you fill in some more details for the listeners on that, please?
Yeah, well, I was away for a chunk of it, so I only really caught the action on Sunday, but, I mean, what a performance from Scotty Scheffler on that course. And I know Le Golf National wasn't set up quite as tough as it can be, or didn't play quite as tough as it can be with the at the French Open, but even so, to go round and shoots 9-under to win the golf tournament, to win the gold medal, was outstanding. And you got a feel for Tommy Fleetwood because he put in a really fantastic effort right up until the end there. But yeah, full of drama. It was almost like a DP World Tour event, wasn't it? With the with John Rahm getting to, what was he, four shots clear at one point, Barry? I think, wasn't he? And
didn't he get to 20-under?
Yeah, I'm sure he was four clear at one point, I saw.
If he'd have parred from there, he'd have won, yeah?
Yep.
He just needed a level par back nine. Yeah, so you're right. If after the 10th hole, if he had level parred from there, he was winning.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's rough to be... The really fascinating thing was I only caught the end. I was playing on Sunday myself, so I only kind of caught the last few holes. But the fascinating thing was watching the pressure on the players' faces. Just in regular weeks, you don't see that intensity of pressure kind of coming across their faces, and you could see it impact like their, particularly on short game shots, it seemed to really kind of manifest Tommy Fleetwood on 17 took more practice swings than I think I've ever seen somebody take practice swings for a short game shot. You could tell how tricky it was and how nervous he was, and then the tempo got really fast on the actual shot and then left himself that 20 footer, but that tempo getting quick was the fear of leaving it short of the green. So it's amazing, the one of the two events we get every, well, 2 or 4 years where there's no money on the line, but you could see how much it meant to everybody.
Yeah, well, you could see how much it meant to Scotty at the end there when he was receiving his gold medal. It was proper emotional. So
Tom Kim as well, broken, you know, really sad and upset because he didn't, you know, put in a Scotty Scheffler like round on Sunday to grab himself a medal. He's got other things on the line, you know, like trying to, you know, win to be successful, but the win also got him off the military service, so he's got time on his side, but it was an opportunity.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure, isn't it? I can see the logic for backing players who've got that carrot dangling in front of them, but the pressure of trying to achieve that is absolutely immense.
Yeah,
from a personal perspective. So yeah, it's refreshing to see. It'd be nice if the coverage. I know you were trying to watch more of it earlier in the week.
Awful,
Barry, and it was just it was tough to try and get any kind of coverage, wasn't it?
I don't know what it's like for everybody else, but here in Ireland, I can't find like a red button option where they're showing multiple sports and you can just go watch it. I don't understand why the Olympics hasn't copped on and monetized things and put on 10 or 15 YouTube channels for different sports, run ads, whatever, who cares? People get to watch the sports then rather than a few minutes highlight package. So I think these are just going to fall on deaf ears. I doubt anybody from the Olympic committee is going to be listening to this. So let's go back to something more, even more miserable, which is another Rory McIlroy fail.
Does all
the right things, gets into the spot and then gone. Yeah, double bogey on 15.
You know that Rory's going to win the FedEx Cup, don't you?
Totally. But it's because it's inconsequential.
It's one of those obvious things that slaps you in the face. I'm sure when Rory goes through these periods of near misses and failures, once the pressure's off, he'll just literally go and win the BMW Championship and he'll win the Tour Championship and it's like, oh, Rory McIlroy, the FedEx Cup champion 2024.
Yeah, but it'll be a hollow victory.
And everyone will be going, oh, isn't Rory's the best when he's in full flow? He's the best in the world. It's this kind of cycle. You could see it coming, couldn't you? I tell you what I was going to say to you in terms of, yeah, we'll come back to the Rory McIlroy fail. Isn't it going to be funny when Xander wins two majors and isn't champion golfer of 2024? Yep. It's clearly going to be Scottie Scheffler. So Xander. It's unbelievable.
Well, Xander is the champion golfer of 2024. You mean player of the year?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, player of the year. He won't get it though, will he?
Scotty has to be now. Well, major, Olympic gold, players championship, six wins in total.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, exactly.
An absurd number of top tens.
Yeah.
But what if Xander wins the FedEx Cup?
That's an interesting
one.
Until Scotty won gold, I was going to put Xander as player of the year. I mean, again, these monikers are bullcrap anyway. Player of the year, nobody cares because in 5 years' time, nobody's going to be wondering who was player of the year in 2024.
Nah.
But they'll remember that Xander won two majors and Scotty won one, and so in revisionist history, you're going to think, well, Xander may have been player of the year that year.
Won and the Olympic gold, though, Barry.
I think that's starting to carry a bit more weight, the Olympic gold.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Rory's collapse.
Yeah. It's brutal. I don't know what to say anymore. It's like he keeps the worst and most painful, torturous, cruel ways keep hitting him like a wrecking ball. I don't know.
Perhaps he needs a little bit more time to reflect and work out where he's at, and needs to come back stronger mentally, I think.
He wasn't the only one, though. What about John Rahm?
Yeah.
What happened there?
Yeah. Well, the live victory the week before wasn't you know, it wasn't a walk in the park, was it? You know, it got over the line, but that was only because Till Hatton three-putted the final green. You know, had it gone the other way, you know, Rahm wouldn't have won that. And perhaps it just found himself in what was ultimately an uneasy position. Yeah, as you say, just having to par his way in to win a gold medal, and the pressure gets to you. Even to the best players in the world, it can be difficult to find that line.
Does show you clearly that gold medal is something now that's putting ultimate major championship type pressure on these players that are in contention, which is good to see.
Yeah.
I wonder what price Scheffler would have been at the start of Sunday. I wonder what price he'd have been at the turn when Rahm was four clear.
No, I expect some people took a chance on him, but it looked fairly unlikely. It had to be that kind of incredible round. But we've seen before that those incredible final rounds are possible. We saw Guido do it at the French Open a couple of years back and come from way off the pace and win. The round is out there. You've just got to play immaculate golf for 18 holes to put that kind of round together around that course. But he did it. World number one for fairly obvious reasons, I think.
With all your jet setting, Paul, I'm surprised you've had the time to watch any golf, to be fair. You're on an international man of mystery, aren't you, at the moment?
I did manage to catch Sunday, yeah. But hopefully the seagulls here, where I am now, won't impact the audio too much. I'll try and scrub them out if it's...
To be fair, it's better than usual, so...
Yeah.
They seek him here, they seek him everywhere. It's Paul Williams, international man of mystery. Let's move forward. It's the, I would say the end of the regular season, but I don't know how it works on the PGA Tour anymore. Anyway, this is the last week that players can qualify for the PGA Tour FedEx Cup playoffs. So from next week, they're playing the FedEx St. Jude Invitational, I believe. Is that what it's classified as now? That changes name every year. And the PGA Tour wonder why they struggle sometimes. It's the FedEx St. Jude Championship next week in Memphis. Top 70 in the FedEx Cup play that. Week after that, we move to the BMW Championship. They're playing that this year at a golf course that I've never come across, Castle Pines Golf Club in Colorado. So we're going to be at altitude for the BMW. That's top 50. And then, of course, the top 30 make it to that monstrosity of a tour championship now with the FedEx Cup starting, scoring, metric, whatever that's classified as this year as well. Someone at the end of that, I believe, gets handed, is it $20 or $25 million?
Same number.
So that you know, as I said, that's likely to be Rory McIlroy.
I'll remind you.
He'll win something completely meaningless and we'll all move on.
It'll be fascinating to if you put the Olympics... You know, some highlights of the Olympics final round against the FedEx Cup final round in Eastlake and just kind of analyze the players' faces for how much they cared and, you know, how much the pressure is impacting. Because for sure, the Olympics, you know, you'd see much more anguish on their faces when things didn't go right.
One thing I will say about Rory again, if you look at where he plays well, clearly Quail Hollow, perfect golf course, Eastlake. Guy's record at Eastlake is phenomenal. So do not be surprised. Anyway, the rank and file, they're fighting to get in this top 70 because once you get into those playoffs, big money, huge money is just over the horizon. Now, to set the agenda here, Victor Perez, who had a very good Sunday round at the Golf National in the Olympics, he's sitting on the bubble right now in 70th spot. So right now he's in, but he can't afford a bad week. Brendan Todd, Seamus Power, Emiliano Grillo, who's fighting for a President's Cup spot, Did you see his moment in the sand last week that was very Sergio Garcia reminiscent? I think Emiliano's under a bit of pressure at the moment. There's Johnny Vegas, Nick Dunlap. All these guys are in the bottom five spots that are eligible to go to Memphis next week. You've then got the likes of Davis Riley, 71, Putnam, 72, Kurt Kitayama, Luke List, Lucas Glover, who won this last year, Lee Hodges, Adam Schenck, Keith Mitchell, Nikolai Højgaard, and Ben Coles. They're sitting 71 to 80. But basically, anyone, if you win this week, you've got to be right down the rankings. If you win this week, you get yourself into that top 70. So there's a lot to play for. A lot to play for. And that narrative will be across all of the TV coverage this week. You're going to be having those live FedEx Cup rankings in the top right-hand corner of the screen all the time. Yeah? Mm. You know, someone makes a birdie on the first hole on Thursday morning. All of a sudden, he's in the top top 60 in the FedEx Cup standings as we go, you know?
I hate that. It's on the team. I knew you were annoying.
That's why I was labouring on the point, Barry.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to be quick, but just this is the first time since the season started that I've looked at the FedEx Cup board on the PGA Tour website.
That is a very valid point. I literally started monitoring it a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, this is it.
Does that tell you, like, we're hardcore golf fans and we couldn't care less about it? So that tells you something's broken with the system when you just have no interest in it until the very end. And our only motivation for checking it is to seeing who's motivated to play really well this week for gambling purposes.
Yeah, agreed. Right, the Wyndham takes place at Sedgefield Country Club. Greensboro, this is proper NASCAR country. Stock car racing, North Carolina. It's a Donald Ross, 1926 original. Nice little golf course. It is short, 7,131 yards. It is a par 70, only two par 5s. I categorise it as, thus, Carolina. I need to change this because at the moment I've classified it on my preview as resort. And it's short in length. Bermuda grass, boys. Here comes the agronomy bit, listeners. It is champion Bermuda grass greens. They are 6,000 square feet on average. That's quite big for a relatively short par 70. This is the bit that I want to get to. Stimp meter. Now, these greens usually run pretty lightning quick because, you know, North Carolina in August, that's hot, it's warm. They normally run at around 12.5 feet on the stimp. So, 20 under, 22 under, something like that tends to win. Not so sure this year. Because they have got extremely unseasonal weather. I am seeing on Thursday and Friday almost 100% chance of rain. And it isn't just a spike, it's pretty much during the whole period. And even more interestingly, for someone that's as anally retentive as moi, no chance of electrical activity. So you're going to get one of these rare things on the PGA Tour, people playing in the rain. It's like an open championship. I then go to Windfinder. And not only are they contending with rain on Thursday, they're going to be contending with gusts up to 30 miles an hour from the northeast.
Awesome.
And they're also on Friday, it calms down a little bit, but in the morning it's still forecast as gusts up over 20 miles an hour. One thing I will point out, Friday afternoon as it stands, looks like the wind starts to dissipate slightly. So you could get a situation where the AM starters on Thursday get the better of the conditions Friday afternoon with likely They're still saying 80-85% chance of rain at 5 o'clock. So at least the wind's starting to disappear slightly. So that might help them. Then on Saturday and Sunday, the wind disappears. The heat comes back. This has changed from yesterday, by the way. This wasn't the case yesterday. All of a sudden, we're looking at 32 and 30 degrees Celsius Saturday and Sunday. That is proper Wyndham Championship North Carolina conditions. It's going to be hot. It's going to be humid. It's going to be very little wind, and it's going to have an extremely soft golf course. So that the scoring over the weekend is going to go, just go incredibly low. So survive the first 2 days. And as we know with a lot of players do not like horrible European type conditions. If you can survive and hang around, it's going to be a complete and utter shootout Saturday and Sunday. All in all, I don't know. You could see something. I think I don't see 22 under in calm conditions, which is what we tend to get here. I can't see them reaching that for obvious reasons. The first 36 holes are going to be pretty tough. I reckon maybe 18, 19 under par gets the win. Doesn't make a huge amount of difference, but I wouldn't knowing all of these details now, I wouldn't categorise this as a resort scoring test. I would categorise it more as a mid-score test. It's going to be high teens that wins this.
Yeah, it's going to be mixed, isn't it?
Going to be very mixed. If you can't grind on that Thursday, and if you down tools, you will clearly miss the cut. I always love this tournament. I mean, how can you not love a tournament? I mean, we've had some great success here over the years. I remember a couple of years ago, Kevin Kisner. You were on Lucas Glover last year, I believe, Paul.
Yep.
Me too.
We've had Brant Snedeker. We've done okay. And, of course, Siwoo Kim in 2016. We've been there or thereabouts at this tournament over the years. So let's hope that continues. Anything else to throw at this? I tell you what else I noticed from this, and a lot of people will switch off here, but if you go back all the way to 2010, the average winning odds of this is 177-1. If I even take the last five renewals, sorry, that's wrong, it's 146-1. If I take the last five renewals, it's that 177-1 number. Glover 90-1, Tom Kim 40-1, Kisner 55-1, Herman 600-1, JT Poston 100-1. Doesn't, for me, shout Sung Jae-im 14-1. I know that everyone's gone mad on Sung Jae-im this week because I expect he's probably the best player in the field. He's certainly in the best nick. And, incredibly enough, I don't think I'd ever see this. He's the 14-1 favourite. There were 16-1s on opening show. He's 9 points shorter than the next person in the betting, who is Shane Lowry and Siwoo Kim, Billy Horschel. 9 points clear.
Mm.
Clear favourite, Sung Jae-im. Anything you guys want to add to this? I personally, the angle I'm coming at from this, and when you dig into this, I think the scoring is going to be, this is going to be a different opening 36 holes to what we're used to here. Bear that in mind. You might need players that have got slightly different skill sets or abilities. On top of that, I genuinely think that this FedEx Cup scenario, and when you look at the winners and where they were ranked, blah, 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 sometimes you need to go a bit deeper in the betting market to find the winner. It isn't sort of concrete on the back of the cranium obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of variables with this, particularly with its position, as you say, in the calendar. It is one of those tournaments where historically, I know there's potentially going to be an asterisk against this year because of the weather conditions, but historically, the same players have tended to perform well year after year. So, the likes of Webb Simpson, who's got an incredible record here. Even when he's turning up in pretty poor form, seems to find a way to play well here. Brandt Snedeker loved this course. You know, when Brandt was a top class player, he absolutely loved this tournament, didn't he? A couple of wins here. Other players that have just got consistent records. Billy Horschel tends to play well here every year. If you dig through the statistics pages this week, the event stats or the combined stats, then you'll just get a number of players who just stick out like a sore thumb because they just love coming here and playing. And it's one of those more kind of specialised events, given the dynamics and the way the course sets up. So, yeah, for me, if you're looking at a starting point, then course form isn't such a bad place. But as I say, there's this asterisk this year because a bit of wind, a bit of rain could throw that all into turmoil.
I've gone to the amazing stats that Paul pulls together. I've gone to our form table. This is Webb Simpson's record at Sedgefield. You listen to this. This is mad. This is from 2010. 8th, 1st, 22nd, 11th, 5th, 6th, 72nd, 3rd, 2nd, 2nd, 3rd, 7th, WD, 5th last year. He averages 66.75 across 15 events. That's mad. Do you think Webb's all right around it?
I think he likes it, doesn't he? Even when he's not playing well, he's turned up and
oh, I know.
Found a way.
Must be something in the water.
Must be.
I've done. Right. I've backed Webb. I looked at that and I just said I can't not.
What price did you get?
I got somebody else in the obviously tipped him up because his price was generally under 100-1 yesterday. So I got him 90-1, 8 places. It was Paddy Power, I think.
There is 125-1 out there with Unibet right now. If you can take your 6 places, that is mad. 125-1 with Unibet. If you go to Ladbrokes, who are 10 places each way, or Coral, they are 66-1.
Yeah, there was some real disparity. I remember this now because when I looked at the first opening show, I think 365 opened at 125 and. Ladbrokes opened at 50, I think. It's just like, you know, one of those players where the bookies just cannot make their mind up how he's going to perform. And that's exactly the conversation we've just had. He can turn up here with little form, loves the course, and can play well. I wouldn't put you off at all, Barry. You've obviously placed a bet, and he could sneak into a place. He could win.
Going all the way back to 2009... The lowest ranked player in the FedEx Cup standings to win this was 44th. His name was Siwoo Kim. He'd never won on the PGA Tour at that point. This was his maiden victory. Every other winner has been higher in the rankings. So, I will throw the names out of players that are below that threshold in the rankings this week. And clearly, it's going to be the big names. Sung Jae Im is the highest ranked player in this field. He's 9th in the FedEx Cup. Shane Lowry, 10. Akshay Bhatia, 15. Robert McIntyre, 17. Must admit, when you saw that forecast, I instantly thought of Robert McIntyre. Brian Harman is 21st. Christian Bezuidenhout is 22nd. Davis Thompson, 24. Horschel, 27. Jaeger, 31. Dietrich, 32, Poston, 34, Cam Young, 35, Siwoo Kim, 36, Adam Hadwin, 37, Cam Davis, 41, Keegan Bradley, 43. So if the current trend continues, none of those players will win this tournament. 44th, interestingly enough, is your old mucker, Paul, Denny McCarthy. So Denny's in the rank.
Yeah, is it a Denny
Interesting.
Course?
I'll tell you the other thing I noticed about this golf course. If I look at the average driving distance of players that have won here, I'm looking at driving distance ranks as they arrived in Sedgefield of 142nd, 118th, 167th, 193rd, 102nd. So the longest drivers were driving the ball that season, 296 yards. Doesn't suggest to me that bombers or long players win this tournament.
No. No, and that's borne out by the players that you see perform well year in, year out. Go back to the Webb Simpson argument. It's
Brandt Snedeker. Never the longest.
No, no, Snedeker was never the longest. And it's that kind of course that gives other types of players a real chance of winning.
When I looked at the rankings here for strokes gained, I'm just bringing up a particular spreadsheet here. You know me. Clearly, I was making a cup of tea rather than setting myself up for the podcast. What I found very interesting, if you look at the last 3 years here, 51% of strokes gained total for the winner, 51 came from tee to green, 49% with the putter. That's incredible. You rarely get that. The other two courses that we've had like that recently were Quail Hollow and Colonial Country Club. And when you look, there is quite a lot of carryover here with winners who have won this and play well at Colonial. Glover, top eight at Colonial. Kisner, a first and a fifth at Colonial. Brandt Snedeker, second. Even JT Poston's had a top 10 at Colonial since his win. So Colonial and here, very similar golf courses. Clearly Colonial bent grass greens. Here, Champion Bermuda grass. Just to give you also some a list of courses that feature Champion Bermuda grass greens for your research. That can't be a bad thing. We are looking at Eastlake. We are also looking at TPC Southwind. Also Jackson Country Club, where they play the Sanderson Farms. There was one a few weeks ago that you covered, Paul, the Myrtle Beach tournament. That features Champion Bermuda grass now, the alternate event.
It did, yeah.
And they also played that tournament twice at Congaree. I think, who won the first one there? Oh, God, Garrick Hicko. Yeah, and the second one was won by Rory McIlroy. Kurt Kitayama finished runner-up. That was a CJ Cup. They also played, the most recent Bermuda grass golf course that they played was Pinehurst number 2, which featured Champion Bermuda grass, the US Open. So those kind of courses have very similar putting surfaces to Sedgefield Country Club. So, to summarise, we need to look a bit deeper in the rankings. I know people will find that incredible, but that's just kind of statistic. Well, it's just fact, the way that it's worked through. We also need to bear in mind that longer hitters can contend here, but ultimately haven't won. And on top of that, we need players that clearly can make plenty of putts on Bermuda grass greens and are comfortable in nasty, windy conditions for the first 36 holes. Anything to add?
I think you've summarised it very well there, Stephen.
Do you want to go first then, Paul? Because I know you've tipped up.
Yeah, it was interesting points on the rankings. And I get your point, and I get the whole argument about players and those that can take their foot off the accelerator and those that absolutely must perform this week to get themselves inside the top 70. My knee-jerk reaction with this, even before the prices came up, was that Sung Jae-in was perfect for this. And I expected him to be favourite. He is favourite. I thought the 16-1 yesterday with 8 places, which was widely available, was very fair. I think the chances of him finishing inside that top 8 or better are pretty good. So yeah, I think he looks absolutely prime for this. One thing I like to do when the predictor models are produced on a Monday is, on the new version of the predictor, I like to go through and just max out every variable. Because what that does is that shows you who, A, is playing the best, B, has the best event or course record, and C, who ranks highest on the additional variables like the Bermuda grass and Carolina and all of the different stuff that you add, Steve. And if you do that, then Sungjae Im is absolutely head and shoulders above the rest of the field. There's clear daylight between Sungjae Im and everyone else.
Yeah.
So statistically, he should be favourite, and he is clear favourite. I think there's very little reason to suggest that he won't be in the mix. He won in Korea back in April, and since then, fourth at the Wells Fargo, six top 12s in his last seven starts, and the one that he didn't top 12 in was the US Open from memory. Fourth at the Scottish Open, Open Championship, finished seventh, and that was after opening with a 76, so his final three rounds really good at the Open. Course form, 6-9, 24th, 2nd, 14th. He actually ranks as the lowest or the best average score around here from all of the players, even better than the aforementioned Webb Simpson. Yeah. So for me, there's nothing to dislike here. 16-1 I think is fair. There's still 14-1 out there available with the additional places. Quite happy to take that. So yeah, at the very top, as boring as it may sound, Sungjae Im is on my card this week.
That year, 2 years ago, when he finished second, just for reference, I'm this anal, I've actually recorded this, he was 15th in the FedEx Cup that particular year. Mm. So it's not as if he hasn't been high up in the rankings and finished a couple of shots shy of some guy there called Jung Hoon Kim. I don't know who he is. He was 40-1. He had no rank whatsoever in the FedEx Cup.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Because he was playing on a temporary membership. Mm. So, yeah, you know, the likes of a Luke Clanton could pop up here.
Yeah.
He's been playing some very nice golf. I'll tell you who I've gone for. My short is Price. And this is very unlike Steve Bamford. I've only got one player that is south of 55-1. Now, this particular individual, he is 53rd in the FedEx Cup standings. And he's got kind of similar form, I would suggest, to the form you were just reading out in terms of Sungjae Im. 14th at the Canadian Open, 19th at the US Open. That was his best major performance in a major in the United States. I think he's also had a 19th at an Open Championship, which kind of I like because of the opening 36 holes and what the weather could be throwing at these guys. Since that, he's finished 2nd in Detroit, 7th at TPC Deer Run, and 4th at the Renaissance Club. That 4th was very much off a very fast finishing Sunday performance that got him into the Open Championship. His first ever win on a main tour, DP World Tour, was on Bermuda Grass Golf Course at Fan Ling in Hong Kong at the 2018 Hong Kong Open. He then won the 2020 Scottish Open at Renaissance. That year was particularly wet and windy. I think he beat Tommy Fleetwood in something like a five-hole playoff to win that.
Yeah.
So, you know, bad weather, all that. Throw that in, clearly deal with it. This guy as well, you would have classified him as team no putt. But we know for a fact that he's been working with a new putting coach and all of a sudden putting lights out. He actually sits across my 8 week trackers in the top 8 for strokes gained putting level with one and Mackenzie Hughes. So that showed you how good his putting is right now. When you're level with Mackenzie Hughes, you're rolling in some putts. I am talking about the irrefutable talent who is still winless on the PGA Tour, that is Aaron Rye. I managed to squeak Aaron Rye in at 35-1 with Betfred on their pick your place, 8 places each way market. Aaron Rye, I've gone 2 places each way on the man from Wolverhampton. Paul, I know you're in.
Yeah, absolutely. I described him yesterday as the Wolverhampton Lucas Glover, and I think that's exactly where, you know, if you get that kind of performance. And Glover last year was in this period of time where he had started to find some form with his putter.
Yeah.
As amazing as it sounds. And he won this and he won the following week, didn't he, where he was just suddenly turned into Mackenzie Hughes on the greens. So, yeah, if you look at the thing with Rye, if you look through the course form, 71st missed cut from his two attempts here. So it flies in the face of everything we've said. The counter argument is exactly as you've described, different conditions. But if you look through the stats, he putted awfully both times that he came here before.
Yeah.
The work that he's been doing with John Graham, his new putting coach, has undoubtedly moved him to a completely different level with the putter. And if you combine that with the fact that he is accurate, he hits greens, I think you can turn that course form entirely on its head this week. And I think he'll be there again contending for that breakthrough performance. Could well be his week. And Barry, you've got to be on him because you've been on him for about 3 months on the trot now.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've loaded up some extra points this week to make sure it punishes the bookies. We'll scoop back anything we might be short, but I think I've got a couple of place returns on him, so I don't think I'm out of pocket with some sort of degenerate bet crush. So yeah, let's go.
If you're looking for someone that's relatively short off the tee and deadly, deadly accurate off the driving tee here, someone that's as straight as a die, and in Kevin Kisner, in Tom Kim, and in Lucas Glover, they had really accurate driving performances leading up to it. In fact, if you look at their season long stats heading into this, they were all in the top 20 for driving accuracy. I think Rye's in the top 5 on the PGA Tour at the moment. He fits the moniker absolutely perfect. I tell you what, those people that were on at 50-1 on first show with Unibet, that's incredible value. 50-1 Unibet priced him up at.
Yeah.
Oh, I tell you what else I want to point out. William Hill. I'm getting so cheesed off with William Hill opening their markets on 6 places each way of 50 odds and then lengthening them to 8 places each way a couple of hours later. Do we have to play these games?
Must be to try and catch the sharps out, Steve.
Yeah, do we have to play these games? Ridiculous. Ridiculous. There was some 40-1 out there, but 50-1 with Unibet, what a price. Whoever's on board with that, congratulations. If he actually wins, that is a phenomenal performance. Right, I'm right out there from that point on. I said 55-1, it isn't, it's 50-1. That's my next. I'm on at 50s, 80s, 90s, 100 and 190-1. So if you guys have got anybody around this Aaron Wright to 50-1 price point, go ahead.
No, I've got two more, one at 66 and one at a silly price.
What about you, Baron?
I've got one shorter than 50s. I'm sticking with Dietrich. He's playing well. Yeah, so I don't have much more than that. I'm in and committed. Good week last week at the Olympics. Could have got into a place in the top 8, but just didn't quite. So starting your final round with a double bogey doesn't help. But he's at that pretty much 45, 50s, 8 places is pretty widely available. So not going to try to make any compelling arguments for him. But just I'm there. I'm on the Dietrich train, so...
It will come, Barry, at some point.
It feels like, or Rye, like one of them has to click a win because they've just been knocking on the door so heavily.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe I'll put a reverse forecast on for the two of them, get some absurd odds, and that's how we smash the bookies.
I'm surprised you can still back Robert McIntyre these days at 55-1. He's won twice on the PGA Tour recently.
Mad, isn't it?
I know he's coming to these tournaments blind, but even so. I took 50-1 with Betfred. Eight places each way again by their pick your place, mate. On Kurt Kitayama. And I don't know, this is something I've spoken about, and I kind of think we're all on board with this. Bad weather, tougher conditions, even though it's 36 holes. He's in need of a decent performance. He's outside the top 70. He's a winner on Bermuda Grass Greens at Bay Hill last year. Not champion, I grant you, they were Tiff Eagle. But he's also had a second place on champion Bermuda Grass at that Congaree golf course. He's finished second behind Rory McIlroy at the CJ Cup. And he's just playing phenomenal golf. He has been playing phenomenal golf tee to green for pretty much the whole season. All of a sudden, he's making a few putts now that he's in trouble and realises he needs to play well to get into the top 70. He's sixth in my rolling 8-week stats for tee to green. Interestingly enough for him, he tends to be a bomber. So that goes against my narrative, I have to say. The one thing I did know is when he played the 3M Open the other week and he actually popped up and contended the whole week, all of a sudden, he was hitting the ball about 30 yards less off the tee. It was almost as if something had clicked in his mind that said, actually, if I don't hit it in the water, don't hit it in the rough, but hit an easy drive off the tee and find fairways and I'm 25 yards back, it might be a good idea. And all of a sudden, he started peppering flags with his good approach play and started making birdies. So if he takes that approach again this week around Sedgefield, he's a debutant. If he isn't absolutely lashing it off the tee but decides, well, actually, if I can find some fairways here, and once I'm in the fairway, just let my good game continue, I think he's got a decent shout, Kitayama. We know he can win. It's a talent and he needs to do well this week. So I am in on Kitayama at 50-1. Right, over to you, Paul. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, and I came close on this particular pick. I wouldn't be surprised if you're on Justin Rose.
My third selection, Steve, is Justin Rose. 66-1. 66
that wasn't
to
teed up, by the way.
No, it wasn't. No, 66-1 with eight places with Bet365 this morning is available. So I think that's a great price. He's been nibbled in elsewhere, but that's still out there, which I think is more than backable. Rose, there's undoubtedly signs of improvement with Rose. Won the Olympics, didn't he, back in 2016. So I had to sit and watch this year's event on the TV, but I wonder if that's just got his competitive juices flowing. Seemed quite vocal and quite buoyant on social media about it all, and what's coming up over the next few weeks for him now that he's back playing some golf. I mean, second at the Open Championship sticks out like an absolute sore thumb. We know how well he played there. Sixth at the PGA Championship before that. So as you remarked, I think on the last podcast we did, Steve, he's just found a way in elite company to find his A game. This is nowhere near elite company. If he plays anywhere near as well as he did in the Open or the PGA Championship, he's got to go close here. He was so much better than everyone else in the field at Troon in terms of the players that are here. Fourth for driving accuracy, second for greens and regulation, first for scrambling, fourth for strokes gained approach, fourth for strokes gained tee to green. Combine those kind of numbers around Sedgefield and he's got to go close, really has. Fifth here in 2009, 10th in 2021, so he's got the course form as well. I thought 66-1 with the additional places was an absolute steal on Justin Rose.
52nd in the FedEx Cup, so he's okay.
Yeah.
The other thing with his game is, I always remember Rose was a phenomenal total driver. He used to be long, didn't he? Very long for his, You look at his numbers now, he's literally a 290 man.
Yes.
So actually, that suits this golf course down to the ground. I came very close. My final tip was going to be, this is full disclosure, it was either going to be Kurt Kitayama or Justin Rose. In the end, I couldn't pull the trigger on Rose, so he's likely going to win. Because those numbers at Troon were phenomenal. It's just the fact that he's done absolutely zip on the PGA Tour this year. It's all major performances.
Yeah,
but maybe he can build himself up for this week.
Mm. Yeah.
My only slight fear is that 52nd, he knows he's playing the BMW next week. He just knows it.
Well, he's gotten to the St. Jude, yeah. The BMW is 50th and above, isn't it? So it's not as if he can completely take his foot off the accelerator.
No. Clearly. But he knows he's at the BMW next week. And at that point, it's like, well, I've then got to literally do something to get to the BMW. But anyway, who knows? But yes, great pick.
Mm, we'll see.
Great pick. I think he's bang on the money. So we've gone for Rose in 52nd and Rye on 53rd. Or you have.
Yep.
Can you believe Patrick Rogers higher in the FedEx? Anyway, it's all immaterial. Barry, over to you. Who's your next pick?
Oh, I said it earlier. Webb Simpson.
You got Webb.
Just couldn't ignore that course form. Just seems like,
yeah.
Ignores his current form, just arrives there, drinks the water and goes and feasts on a nice paycheck and
yeah. He'd love it, wouldn't he?
There's another one I was tempted by, I think I'm going to pull the trigger, is Nikolai Højgaard.
Yeah.
If he clubs down and he can, you know, if he can rein in that aggression a little bit, then quite possibly.
A little bit. So he's outside the top 70 and good performance last week, 14th at this event last year.
He's actually played here, which is great. I mean, this must be one of the first PGA Tour golf courses he's come to where he's actually got experience.
And this is, I mean, we're assuming he'll be extremely motivated to keep his card after getting it through the DP World Tour last year. So that could be, you know, the one that's super motivated who's outside the 70.
Hmm. Yeah, he's 79th.
So he wouldn't need a win. And that's also a problem, though. When you don't need a win, you can just get second or third. But, yeah. Hey, if I get a place return on it, that's awesome as well.
Yeah. For his world ranking, and I know people are screaming at me, well, ranking, Steve, don't mean anything anymore. He's probably... there's a bit of value in that price, in my opinion. I mean, would you rather take Nikolai Højgaard or Luke Clanton at a very similar price? I know who I'd take, personally.
Yeah.
But like,
I'm out into the wild and wacky world now, guys, so just bear with me. I mean, this will go one of two ways. We probably know which way it's going to end up, but I'm on Matt Kuchar at 80-1. Kuch! Carrying momentum and motivation. Matt Kuchar has not missed the FedEx Cup playoffs since they were brought in 2007. He's 111th in the FedEx Cup standings. And Barry, this is what you just said. He pretty much needs to win or finish second to get those 41 spots to get in the top 70. Mm-hmm. It's basically SHIT or bust for Kuchar this week. And it was the same at the 3M Open when he finished, was it second last time out? Third? Yeah, third. So basically, he's kind of in the playoffs already. He has been since the last appearance to get into them. But Kuchar, Brant Snedeker, Kevin Kisner. If we all sat there over the table having a pint, not that we'd ever do that, of course, us three. You know, if we were in our favourite local in North London having a beer like we did after Wentworth last year, and we were saying, you know, throw players into a pot who are similar, who would go well around Wyndham, around Sedgefield. Snedeker, Kisner, you just lamp Matt Kuchar straight in there. Similar, very, very similar kind of players. Very, very similar. So I think the course suits. He's never played much here because he's never needed to, because he's an elite player and the Wyndham Championship was never going to be on his... He was waiting for the playoffs to start, not scratching to get into them. But you look at his record at Harbour Town, it's ridiculous. 10th, 7th, 1st, 5th, 9th, 2nd and 3rd. So Kuchar, there was a little bit of 90-1. That disappeared as I was literally writing my preview. But I did manage to get on at 80-1 with Boyle Sports, 8 places each way on Matt Kuchar. I know you've got he's never been your favourite, has he, Barry, since he stiffed that Mexican caddy.
Yeah.
when he won down at El Chameleon many years ago.
That's an
but I think Kuchar's got a great chance this week. I really do.
He should do. He's fourth in your 8-week tracker for strokes gained approach. So that should give him plenty of opportunities.
Yeah. I'm on JJ Spawn, another one, another plotter. I do love plotters this week. He's had a couple of top 10 finishes recently. 10th at the Rocket Mortgage, 9th at the 3M Open. He was second after 36 holes at the Barracuda. Finished 29th. Playing some great stuff all over my strokes game trackers again. Won on Bermuda grass last year in Texas at TPC San Antonio. Kuchar, by the way, he's 111th in the FedEx Cup standings. Now, from memory, Lucas Glover was... Guess what? He was 112th last year when winning this. Spawn is outside the 125. He's at 127, so he's still playing. Saying that, that's not true because he's got his exemption from last year. I was going to say playing for his card, but he's got an exemption anyway. But clearly the form is improving. I'm on at 90-1 with Bet365 on Spawn. I wouldn't be surprised if one of you two might be interested in this particular bet. CT Pan. Now, I managed to scrape 100-1 on CT Pan with Bet365 via their each-way extra facility last Monday lunchtime. Pan. I can always remember I was on Branch Snedeker here a few years ago and Pan was all over Snedeker like a rash. Snedeker on Sunday could barely hit a fairway, barely hit a green. He was using all of his short game, holing out. That was after he shot 59 in round one. Snedeker, never forget it. CT Pan was all over him like a rash, playing great golf, making birdie after birdie. And you're thinking, he's going to win this. And he got to the 18th hole and he hit a bad drive and Snedeker effectively won by a shot, I believe. But I've always had CT Pan in my mind for this golf course ever since. He's finished second here. He's also a winner at Harbortown. And Pan has been playing some very nice golf of late. He was third at TPC Deer Run at the John Deere Classic the other week. He shot 65, 63, 68, 64. He was T2 behind Davis Thompson. And he was in the top 20 last week. He was at the Olympics, so I think CT Pan's a decent bet this week. Pan is way down the rankings. I think he's outside the top 120. Oh no, he's not. He's 88. Like that spot. He's finished. I think he's had a top three in Mexico as well. So Pan, love that bet. And then Wild and Wacky gets even crazier. I couldn't quite get my head round why Matt Neesmith was 190-1. Because he's been playing some great golf. Second at the ISCO Championship and 9th at the 3M Open last time out. Carolina guy. We've also had Tom Kim, JT Post and Siwoo Kim, Patrick Reed, Webb Simpson, Arjun Atwal and Ryan Moore win this tournament for their first main tour victory since 2008. So, first winners here does happen. I think Matt Neesmith's kind of flying under the radar. Been playing some very nice stuff. He's one of these guys as well. He'll miss the cut 7 times in a row. But when he finds his game, like he did in 2022, he had a run of 3rd, missed cut, 12th, 4th. He also had later on in that year, he had a 9th, a 2nd and a 9th. So he's clearly found his groove. He's playing some great stuff. He's a Carolina guy. He was 11th here after 54 holes 2 years ago. Dropped to 36th. But like where he plays well, he tends to be one of these golfers that plays well on shorter or medium length golf courses. And it doesn't tend to bother him whether it's bent grass or Bermuda grass. He can play on both. So I think Neesmith at 190-1. I was surprised I got those odds, but quite happy to take them on board. I'm just floating down. What kind of price is he out there at? Has he been backed at all? I've got no idea.
Neesmith, 175.
175 right now. So, for a guy that's finished second and ninth in his last three, I thought that was generous. Right, any others, chaps? Any others?
The only other one I've backed is the guy who won this event after the last Olympics, back in 2021. He's been showing some good progressive form. 64th at the ISCO Championship, 33rd at 3M Open last time out. We talked about Webb Simpson coming and performing here off very little incoming form, and they finished tied fifth last year after arriving off very little. But yeah, I thought 500-1 opening show with Kevin Kisner was disrespectful. So I snaffled a little bit of that before the price collapsed yesterday.
Special KK.
You're teasing me now, Paul. I was thinking about it, and I just, there's some signs of life there that he can, you know, he hasn't completely lost the game. I wonder how he'll cope with the rain. That was my only concern.
500-1, Barry. I'm happy to find out.
Don't care. You buy him an umbrella and send it over.
But as you say, there have been signs of life. Before that, it was just a string of missed cuts, but made the cut at the ISCO Championship. And 33rd at 3M, but then within that, he was, I think during the first round, he was much closer to the top of the lead at one point. So this thing's just starting to percolate. And if there's a course that lends itself to players who can just come and rekindle that that magical form, perhaps this is the one. A bit fanciful, really, but yeah, 500-1 I thought was worth a nibble. Clearly, there's other people who think the same, because generally he's been backed into between 200 and 300-1 now on Tuesday morning. But yeah, worth it.
Kisner's game's been so dire, it just basically can do anything. But one thing he has started to do recently, and we've seen this, we've done this a long time. You see this with players. They find something that all of a sudden they can have a bit of faith in. And with Kisner, he was always a ridiculously straight driver of the golf ball. All of a sudden, he started driving the ball a lot better. And you would hope from that point, things will start to come with his greens in reg, his approach play will start to get better. He's there or there. I think he's starting to percolate, clearly.
You never know.
You know, probably finding, you know, spending more time on the practice range rather than the commentary booth would help his game. But, yeah, if there's one course Kisner's going to go well at, it's going to be this one, or it's going to be Sea Island.
Yeah.
Any interest in CT Pan, Barry?
Nope. All yours. Anytime I've backed him, he has combined that bet with a miscut, so I don't think myself and CT are on the same wavelength, so he's all yours.
Yeah, he does do that. He either goes well or literally finishes miscut. Definitely. Will Zalatoris 90-1. Did you ever think you'd see the day? Completely, in my mind, badly suited to this golf course. I mean, you've got to be gaining half your strokes with a putter. Good luck with Will. Right. Is that us? Are we done?
Yep, no more from me.
All clear here.
Have you got some golf next week, Paul? I know you've had like 7 weeks off on the DP World Tour. I think you've got the real Czech Masters.
Yeah, we've got a good run coming up now on the DP World Tour all the way up till November, so that's good. It's a new course next week, so that's going to take some investigation, and then there's a new course the following week as well. They do like to throw these curveballs at us, the DP World Tour. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, this, I think it's PGA National Prague next week, or something of that ilk. So, a bit of digging to do.
I thought the DP World Tour pros will have a riot time in Prague. The old nightlife, they're going to be loving it.
Yeah.
Is Vijay Singh playing?
Not that I've seen, no. Although there's a few invites to be announced, so maybe, you never know.
Maybe Vijay will fly in on the jet.
It looks like a fairly weak field, which is surprising, really, because, as you say, the opportunities for these rank-and-file DP World Tour players are few and far between at this point in the year. But
I'm sad enough to remember last year, old Adrien Domon de Chassard flew in with Ludwig Oberg for the Czech Masters. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And look what happened to Ludwig since then.
Yeah.
And I think they were basically priced the same in the market. I mean, if you want two careers that have gone slightly divergent, those two.
The angle that he's accelerated his career from there has been incredible for Roberg.
So you've got that. I've got the FedEx St Jude Championship, the start of the playoffs, top 70. So a decent week next week. Thank you for your time, guys. I hope your bets go well. Thanks for your time on your holiday, Paul.
Yeah, no worries. Best of luck.
Best of luck to you. Best of luck to listeners. Best of luck to you, Barry.
Cheers, boys. Best of luck.
We'll be back next week. See you again soon. Goodbye. If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.